From the shadowy depths of the city, where justice and mystery intertwine, emerges a broadcast as daring and vigilant as the masked Avenger himself. You are tuned in to the Green Hornet Case Files, unveiling the legacy and cultural significance of one of the greatest crime fighters of all time. Now, let the adventure begin. Here are your hosts, Corey and Greg.
Don't you think we should have, like, really cool crime fighter names or something?
Yes.
Instead of Corey and Greg.
I've always thought that.
Okay. All right.
I'm really hoping Fat Cato doesn't stick.
Well, but the only person that brings it up is you.
Right, because it's funny.
In my other life, I used to be called Fish, but that's not a real crime fighter, fightery kind of name.
I don't know. Is it the calling card really gets noticed after a couple of days?
Yeah. Like guests, they stink. Fish that anyway. Hey, welcome back. It's episode 3 of the Green Hornet Case Files. I am Greg.
And I am Corey.
And
until we have better names.
Yeah, until we have better names. Somebody asked me about the voice at the beginning of the podcast.
You shared that with me.
Who that was. And it's Lauren Bacall.
Okay.
That's what we're going with.
That's what we're going with? I'm down with Lauren. That's good. That's good.
She was doing her absolute best, Lauren, but actually it's my wife, Gail, and she has done a lot of radio and voiceover stuff with me as well.
Oh, yeah. I remember on the former cast, she did the outro.
Yes.
And you did something to her voice that I didn't recognize it right away. But
she was doing her best, Lauren Bacall. We're both huge fans of the 30s and 40s, and so she's all about that kind of film noir-y kind of.
I'm the type of person that has to have noise when I sleep, and I can't put on music because I'll listen to it. I have a hard time doing. I thought, I could do podcasts or old radio. Now I listen to it.
Yeah,
I need something I've seen 12,000 times, so it's been all white noise. That helps me fall asleep. So I've been watching The Fresh Prince of Bel-Air.
Which has absolutely nothing to do with the Green Hornet.
You'll see where I'm going with
here
this.
Here it comes.
And it was because you mentioned Lauren Bacall that made me think of it. When I woke up this morning, so 5:30 this morning, I wake up to the sound of Zsa Zsa Gabor.
who
had done a guest episode.
That's right, darling.
Yes. So, and I woke up, like, came out of the groggy state thinking I was watching Green Acres.
Oh, really?
Because I used to watch Green Acres all the time as a kid. But anyway, so the character she was playing was a mock of herself. Her name was Sonia Lamour or something like that. But they kept referencing all these movie posters that were hanging up in her house, and it was like Clark Grable and Lauren McCaw.
There you go.
That's where my that's my tangent.
So not a direct tie-in, but
no, but yeah. It just made me think of it.
And you know, whoever it was that that referenced the opening, they called her our Miss Case.
Yeah,
and I like that. We have our own Miss Case.
I thought that's what you were just going to stick with.
I should have. I actually should have.
Give her credit, though.
A couple of things, some shout-outs I want to do before we kind of jump into things. This episode, we wanted to get into the first movie serial.
The Tunnel of Terror.
The Tunnel of Terror.
Yeah.
But to get to that, there's a few things that some business and things that we want to get through. A big shout out to my friend Randy Saffel, who has been doing our artwork.
Yes. And they're so cool.
So if you're so inclined to check it out, go to Instagram and just type in Saffel, S-A-F-F-L-E Designs. Saffel Designs. And Randy just... He does some incredible stuff.
He's just knocking it out of the park. It's
well, and not
so
only
cool.
Not only graphics, he does 3D design too.
Well,
the sting that I carry. And I have the old gas gun, the 1940s gas gun, and he did designs on both of those, and they're just excellent. Absolutely excellent.
You know, it's funny because every time I see them, every time you share a new one with me, I'm like, it just adds an air of legitimacy that we don't deserve, but I kind of love it.
And he's a heck of an artist.
Yeah.
He is a really good artist. Does a lot of oil paintings. He's kind of a Western-themed kind of artist, but he does all this other side stuff. So big thanks to Randy for doing that.
We definitely appreciate you, Randy.
Yeah, definitely. Some shout-outs, too, to some folks who have sent some really, really nice comments. We've had comments from James McMahon and Brian Grantham, a number of others. I don't have everybody's names down here. If we were going to do shout-outs,
yeah,
we'd be here for...
Yeah, it's been
crazy.
Again, we kind of touched on it last time before our interview with Martin, that the outpouring was...
Yeah.
Kind of shocking.
Yeah.
And I mean, like, we're not talking, you know, thousands, but I mean, it's really like, wow, there are people who really genuinely care and care enough to put up with us.
Well, yeah, there is that. There is that. Nice email from Todd Stutz, who says he's been a Green Hornet fan since he first saw the TV show in 1966, then found the radio shows. We're going to talk about movie serials and the stuff that he hasn't gotten into yet here in just a little bit. If you do have a comment, a question, maybe we can, maybe we can't answer it. Probably not. You know, I'll have to grab the book here and look it up, but send us an email at podcast@greenhornet66.com.
You know, again, the outpouring, one of the things that Martin had said and explained that you initially had found kind of incendiary. That was one of the first comments that you sent me, was somebody going, ah!
Yeah.
And I totally appreciated the fervor behind it.
Yeah.
And they were in disagreement with Martin's assessment. And I think the explanation was slightly off kilter from what his intent was. I think the word specifically that everybody kind of keyed in on, same with you, that your jaw just dropped at the word coward.
Coward, yeah, yeah.
And that wasn't quite, because he was still referring to him in a heroic sense.
Mm-hmm.
And so it was this, like, overcoming that fear to be the hero, which is what makes a hero at the end of the day. But I expected it as soon as we recorded it, and y'all did not let me down.
Well, I'm happy we didn't let you down. Had some other conversations this last week with Scott Garrison, a nice chap that actually got turned on to us by the guy that we gave the shout out, you know, last time around, Kevin.
Oh, Cyclical. I love that.
Yeah, it's, you know, a friend of the friend. I have another podcast I'm getting ready to launch called The 6 Degrees of Conversation, the 6 Degrees thing. You know, Kevin talks to Scott. Scott talks, you know, I like it. And then I had this is, I'm going to go down a little bit of a wayward path here for just a sec. Kim Baert sent me a note how much they liked the show, and I don't know if Kim's a guy or gal.
Okay.
But I always do what I do, and that's click on everybody's profiles and, you know, go check them out. Well, Kim's profile picture is a picture from Wichita, Kansas, probably back in the 70s or 80s. There was a late night horror host called The Host.
Oh, okay. Yeah, yeah.
And the name of the show was called Nightmare, and it was The Host and Rodney. Rodney was his Igor-y kind of character. And
I don't know why I like that so much. That's just Rodney.
It was awesome. And the guy who played The Host was a guy named Tom Leahy. I know this because I grew up on Tom Leahy as The Host and another character he did.
Yeah, we have discussed this several times.
He did another afternoon character called Major Astro. And so when growing up, we ran home too. This is, you know, even before the Dark Shadows-y kind of thing, where you had to run home so you could watch Dark Shadows, where you ran home to see Major Astro, because Major Astro would play all the cartoons.
Oh, okay.
Right all after right. school. Yeah, yeah. So Tom was the host, and I knew Tom. I had gotten to know Tom a little bit over the years. And Tom was the inspiration for a TV show that I created out here back in the mid-90s called Friday Fright.
Yep.
And you're familiar with Ravina, the goddess of Stonehenge, and her one-eyed, blind, mute, dummy dwarf, Enoch.
Yep.
And so there was a 6 degrees kind of thing here with seeing Kim's picture of being the host and being,
yeah,
know, throwing me back to all that and my inspiration for the TV show Friday Fright. So
when Friday Fright just, what it was, 2020 got the airing on the streaming service?
2020 or 2020, well, it was 2 years in a row. It was
2020 and 2021.
I think so. I think so. The Film Detective.
Yes, yes. Which, big shout out to them. It was really cool to see.
Yeah.
I was in California when the first episode aired on the streaming service, and we watched it down, down there, and it got a great reception from all the weird hippies I was hanging out with at the time.
I'm glad hippies loved us. I'm glad they really did. Many other ideas may be in the offing with maybe we'll marry the Friday Fright folks with the Green Hornet at some point in time.
Friday Hornet.
The Friday Hornet.
Green Fright 66.
Yeah. You know, let's give ourselves a little buzz on that one, shall we? Before I jump into the main topic, the theremin sound, did you know that, I just gave it away, the buzz was made by a theremin?
You know, I didn't, but as soon as you just let the cat out of the bag, I can hear it.
You can hear it. And a fellow friend of mine has a theremin that he loaned me, and I worked with that sucker for hours trying to get that sound, and I just could not get it down. Moving your hand or whatever it was. Did you know that there's an app? There's a website that you can go to.
Of course there is.
It's called Theramix.
Oh, that's kind of cool.
And it's, if you want to do this out there in Green Hornet land, it's theremin.app. Theremin.app. And you can go into this thing and you can do all sorts of turn
off.
It's
just rolling off your, is that just off your mouse pad? Your
track
pad?
Just off my mouse pad.
Oh, that's cool.
And you can change the waveforms, you know, different oscillators here on the whole thing. And I'm an old synthesizer guy from way back, but
I'm loving it.
Anyway.
I'm just waiting for you to break into Trek, your other passion.
Whoa. Anyway.
No, that's really cool. So that's where the sound clip came from?
That's where my sound clip came from.
Very well done.
They used one back in the 30s because the theremin, I think, was invented in maybe the teens or 20s originally, which blows my mind that electronic instrument was made that long ago.
Well, I mean, coming off the wavelengths that you're just fluctuating, I can see a total accident. I mean, I could be wrong, but if you know the history of the theremin
podcast
at Green Hornet 66, I'd like to know. But I had a friend contact me this week, and I will be attending my first non-horror related con.
Oh?
I'm going to SummerCon in Puyallup. But I was curious if the Hornet and Batman are going to make an appearance.
We are talking about it. It's in kind of a prime vacation time.
Mm-hmm.
We missed it last year because of a vacation. But at this point in time, we are talking about it. My buddy John, who is Batman to my Green Hornet, keeps asking me about it. He sent me a picture last night. I think it was last night. Priscilla Presley is going to be at SummerCon. And I said, oh, Priscilla is now a superhero? don't get it. But anyway.
Well,
hey, congratulations.
I was pretty excited. The only cons I've ever been to are horror themed, because I did a horror podcast for a long time. I'm stoked on this one. I'm getting to. I already got the picture set up. I'm gonna go meet Ron Perlman.
Nice.
So I get to meet Hellboy, and that's a big, big, big one for me.
Yeah.
But I was kind of thinking that if you do attend, that maybe we could do an on location small mini Hornet episode.
You know, not a bad idea. So I'd have to pack some gear.
I know. But, I know. I'm springing this all on you mid recording.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, what better time? I'm a captive audience at this point. All right. Well, SummerCon here in Washington State happens, mid-June, I think.
Yeah.
Something like that. So, yeah.
It's like 2 weeks before I go on my cruise.
Oh. Oh, well.
So, but you know. I'm going. I'm excited.
Nice. Nice.
So what was your other little tidbit you wanted to tackle?
I think I want to save it.
Okay.
To the end of the other discussion.
Okay.
If we can do that. You watched, right after we decided to do this Green Hornet Case Files, you jumped right in and watched the first episode, Tunnel of Terror, of the 1940 movie serial.
Yep.
And you texted me or called me, I can't remember, and you were jazzed.
Oh, so my experience with the Hornet, like we've talked about, had not included that. And it is such a good version. Like, it might be my favorite version.
Really?
It really is. I do love the radio stuff that I've listened to. And, I mean, obviously, we've talked, you know, the TV show is fantastic.
Yeah.
But as far as the character, the story, that's my favorite zone, is that 40s take on it. And it's... First off, the quality of what is out there for you to watch if you decide to go look and watch the serials, even just off of the internet streaming service of YouTube.
Yeah.
The quality of the video blows me away. It's so crisp and so clean. It's not all degenerated like I expected it to be.
Do you know that they've just released it on Blu-ray?
No, I did not know that.
Last year, I think a year ago, they released it on both serials of the 40 and 41 on Blu-ray, and I immediately picked them up. I have to be honest and say my Blu-ray player is trashed, and I haven't been able to actually sit and watch it, so I've been watching them from the streaming service from YouTube or wherever it was.
Right.
And I had them. I think I had copies of them from probably somebody else on my Plex.
Yeah.
But I can't wait to actually see whether the Blu-rays are any crisper yet than like you're talking about.
We should have a night.
We should.
Get some vegan chili going down.
Yeah.
Hit it up.
I'll get my vegan chili going.
But so it just the quality of it alone grabbed me right away.
Mm-hmm.
But then watching it, man, I'm with you. The Zephyr is a beautiful black beauty. It's wonderful. The storytelling's awesome. Luke, he's just so cool in it too. It's got everything you're looking for.
The interesting, and I just watched it again like a couple of nights ago just to kind of refresh my brain on it. And I sat and I've made, a page and a half of notes. And a lot of those notes had to do with Key Luke, because this is the episode where they introduce Kato as right out of the box. The first thing that you see is he's working on some new device that's supposed to work for the Black Beauty, and they're blowing something up, and I can't remember exactly what it was, but... And, Britt Reed saying, you're really a genius about this. And then it gets brought up about the fact that he is his ethnicity. And, Kato's ethnicity is all over the flippin' place.
Well, and that indeed is a discussion for another time.
I want to, yeah.
And we've kind of dabbled in it. We've discussed it a little bit. But that, Key Luke just brings, there's something to it that's... quite a bit different than Bruce's.
Oh yeah.
And I think the modern look at how we see Kato is so funneled through Bruce Lee. Like, just everything post him is that Kato.
Mm-hmm.
Even into, what was the Danny Yen movie?
Donnie Yen.
Donnie Yen, yeah, yeah. The Fist of Legends. I think that's right. I'm not 100% podcast. Yeah, Green Hornet 66. But either which way, when it, that's, you know, he's yeah. doing his day, he's doing Bruce's Kato. But it's Key Luke's version is just so Johnny on the spot and cool yeah. and, yeah. you know, again, a genius. Like that aspect, not that Bruce didn't have that aspect, but it was really more focused on the physicality as opposed to the Alfred slash Q of the character.
Yeah, those that supplied the toys, the gizmos, the gadgets, the explosions.
Yeah.
But not only does Kato do that, one of the scenes in the show, I think Kato just does like this flying leap and takes somebody out. And it's like, I know there wasn't a stuntman for that because it was Key, you know, flying through the air.
Yeah.
And it just always kind of blows me away. And then there's one scene a little bit later on where they're getting ready to go out for the very first time as the Hornet and Kato. And it's Gordon Jones, who is the Green Hornet, Britt Reed, at this point in time. And I'll say this right now. I'm not super stoked with Gordon Jones as Britt Reed.
I get that.
But he pulls out of a drawer the mask, and he says, Kato says to Britt Reed, is this what you were looking for? And he says, oh, this is brilliant. This is absolutely, and turns it around. And all the screen captures that I've been doing to make sure that my mask looked just like that one.
Is from that scene.
Is from that scene. And then he also pulls out the gas gun.
Right.
Which is made off of the old German Mauser, and adds the little
canisters,
whatever they are. But it was such an incredible intro to the whole thing.
So, and that's kind of what I was like. I was sucked in. Like, I don't want to be. I like older media, mm-hmm. like across the board. But there was something about it that just was a little bit head and shoulders above what I was expecting, honestly. And I'm with you. Jones is fine, but the atmosphere and the storytelling of the serial, specifically Tunnel of Love, is
Tunnel of Terror.
Tunnel of Terror. Tunnel of Love is
it's another whole different movie. Story.
Actually, wasn't episode 2 Tunnel of something else? Tunnel of Thunder or something?
I don't remember now. Might be Tunnel of Love. I don't know.
It's
the porn version of.
And
yes, most definitely on that one. All right. I'm sorry about that.
But what I'm getting at is the Tunnel of Terror is such an awesome introduction to the character if you don't have any other familiarity with it. Like my boys had never seen any Green Hornet.
Yeah.
They sat and watched all 21 minutes of the first one.
Cool.
So, and dug it. I mean, they didn't ask to watch a bunch more, but it was something.
And, you know, it was made in the same vein as all of the cliffhanger serials.
Yeah.
Very simple as far as the premise. It's the bad guys. It's the syndicate. You know, like Martin was saying 2 weeks ago. It's the syndicate in this particular instance, and it's the boss.
Yeah.
You never see the boss until, you know, at some point nine later on down the road. And it was always, you know, racketeering. It was, you know, some kind of, you know, we're going to wreck the streets. We're going to put bubblegum on the streets or something. Some weird thing.
Yeah. But
you look at those compared to the problems we have today, and it's like, pfft, was nothing.
Well, yeah.
But it's 1940.
It wasn't nothing then, though.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, like, it's when you got to worry about guys running booze.
Yeah.
Right? That was.
It was a deal.
As dangerous of a cartel. I shouldn't say as dangerous now, but yeah, everything's escalated. Everything's on steroids now.
Yeah.
But at the time, it was the same level of heavy culturally. And that's. Yeah, it does seem quaint, air quotes.
Yes, yes.
But it's not. It's not. It's still, like, if you can just put yourself in that time zone, it gets heavy.
It does. It does. They did 13 of the Gordon Jones shows,
mm-hmm.
and each one leads into the next, and it's always, you know, some miraculous escape that, you know, they do. We just watched the very first Phantom from 1940-ish
nice.
The other night. Same kind of thing.
I mean, yeah.
It's all that same story arc where, you know, it's this great, terrible danger, and then all of a sudden it's some explosion, or it's falling off a cliff, or, you know, and you know coming back the next week it's going to be whatever.
Well, I mean, and then they just took that same formula and put it in space and gave us Flash Gordon and Buck Rogers.
Exactly. And all of them. Yeah. Same basic idea. There were a couple of, I don't know if you know this, maybe you do, but when Gordon Jones, when Britt Reed puts on the Green Hornet mask, it's no longer Gordon Jones' voice.
No, I didn't
realize
that.
Did you pick up on that?
I didn't notice that.
If you go back and listen, you will not hear Gordon Jones while he has the mask on. No. They wanted to keep consistency with the radio show that had been on the air for 4 years, 5 years. So they brought in Al Hodge, who was the voice of Britt Reed on the radio show. And as soon as he puts the mask on, all of a sudden his voice changes and it's Al Hodge.
Oh, I did not even key in on that.
So pick up on that when you watch it again.
Oh, yeah.
Now, when they did the next serial and Warren Hull? Yeah, it's Warren Hull, replaced Gordon Jones, then Warren must have been in his contract that it's going to be my voice that's doing the thing. But really cool idea that they did that.
Just, again, that connection, just one more link in the chain.
Yeah.
That's cool. Yeah. I really dig that.
Yeah. Gordon Jones was the only one, too, that changed. Because when the second serial came along, it was the same Lenore Case, played by Ann Nagel. It was the same Cato, obviously, with Key Luke, and Mike Axford.
Yeah.
Was Wade Bontler. And they didn't make any kind of reason why, nothing. When they brought the new series back, it was just a different, I don't know.
I got no beef with that, because okay. I like the second guy better.
and there is a little tie back in with the DVD collection. If you buy the DVD collection, the liner notes were written by Martin.
Really?
So there you go.
But that's not included in the Blu-ray?
It's just
the DVD?
In the Blu-ray.
Oh, okay.
The Blu-ray. Okay. So, yeah, and I can sure help you out with that at some point in time.
You make the chili. I'll bring the Blu-ray player, man. We got this.
We got it taken care of. I went through some of the lines in the show. Just kind of blow me away. Reed at one point and says, "I'm not just a playboy." I'm thinking, okay, well, it's an establishment because they do reference Senior Reed.
Yeah.
A couple of different times in the show. They never address where he is or what has happened to him in the serial, in that at least the first one,
right?
That I picked up on. Maybe I, you know, took a nap at some point in time. I am getting on in my years.
Go ahead. I had a question, but
all right, go ahead. No,
now just out of curiosity, do you watch it? Do you ever just put it on and watch all the way through, like 3.5 hours or whatever?
Oh, yeah.
It is?
Yeah.
Okay, just as one movie.
Yeah, when. And in fact, they did go back and re-edit into a movie at one point in time.
Yeah.
Yeah. So it is one of those things that I can put on and just kind of keep one eye on it while I'm, you know, doing something else. And yeah, I do that quite often.
Heck yeah. All right. Yeah. I haven't gotten Well, I haven't gotten 3 hours to do it.
Not with your work schedule.
No, but I really want to because, like, yeah.
So they mentioned at one point in time something about the horn on the Black Beauty sounding like the giant green hornets that they had in Africa. So my wife immediately hits up, you know, Google, mm-hmm. and... Should I be giving Google a plug at this point? It's become eponymous with...
It literally went from a noun to a verb.
Yeah. She did a little bit of research, and there is actually a very large, dark green wasp from Africa called the cuckoo wasp or the emerald wasp, and there's something like 3,000 different species of wasp. I didn't realize.
I had no idea.
There really is a green hornet out there.
Wow, that's...
I'm going to Africa. I'm going to find...
Have fun. I'm going to stay right here.
You go, boy. You just go and have a good time, okay?
Just you and Africanized bees.
Oh, there we go.
Saturday Night Live.
The what was the giant wasp or the giant, what was the hornet, the one that we had here in the state?
The murder hornets.
The murder hornets. There you go. I don't know. It's kind of a crazy thing. Ms. Case at one point in time says that, you know, I've been working for Reed Sr. for over 5 years. So now she's established at, yeah. And that kind of threw me. I hadn't picked up on that before. She's been there.
You know, and that's and that kind of falls in with the, it's just, let's build this world. And yeah. It pops off so quick that you just fall right in with, yep, this is what's happening, you know. And that's giving her that history and that little, well, it goes back to what Martin was saying about the episode Exposed.
Yes.
When they find out that Britt is the Hornet.
Right.
You know, and so it's all that buildup already. Set and ready to rock and roll.
Oh, it's nice that everything sort of ties back into itself.
Yeah.
And does a lot of different callbacks. I made just all sorts of notes here. I talk about the Hornet Seal. He shows the Hornet Seal at one point in time and puts it on somebody, you know, that he's knocked out or whatever. Yep. That was a nice callback. Obviously, then later on, they don't use that so much.
Right.
Like they did in the radio show. They talk about, Miss Case talks about Green Hornet being the modern day Robin Hood.
Yeah.
To save the city.
Yep. Which is even like an aspect of it that kind of feels like it doesn't get touched on a whole lot of his philanthropic end of who Britt is.
Yeah. Yeah. I know they do a lot in the comics. Because they're, you know, he's always showing up for these parties where mm-hmm. he's supporting this or supporting that. Was the Batman and Green Hornet episode tie over, if I remember right, that happened in that. They both wind up on a train.
Bruce and Britt, yeah.
Yeah. And thought that was, you know, Britt's there because he's covering it for the newspaper and Bruce is there because he's donated or whatever. Yeah. Which I thought was kind of cool. A lot of the shows, we're talking about Kato and how Key wasn't really channeling Bruce Lee. Obviously, it didn't channel Bruce Lee. But I think Bruce, in many ways, probably was channeling the other way around.
Yeah.
Because he does. He gives a guy a massive karate chop at one point in time.
Yeah.
You know, does that jump up straight up in the air kind of thing and whacks him on the back of the neck. And
which is so fun.
It really is. It really is.
That's the word that kept coming back to me on my rewatch. It's fun. Like, it's serious. It's not silly. It's not funny. But it's fun. You just come out of it going, yeah. I can't wait for the next one.
One of the aspects, too, that gets me... and I'll say this very tongue-in-cheekly, coming from a newspaper, a media background, let me just say, coming from a media background, is at one point, two of the reporters are showing up at a crime scene expecting to be allowed into, you know, the crime scene. And they used to show that a lot, where reporters were almost as important to the crime scene as the police officers that were coming in. And that's changed a lot.
Well, yeah.
Reporters are now.
But I mean, like, if you go, I mean, that's going all the way back to really the key that of media sensation of crime going back to is Jack the Ripper.
Yeah.
Was they would, they, the newspapermen were right there and allowed in and going all over the place. They had, they didn't have photographers. They had sketch artists.
Yeah.
That would come in and draw the whole scene.
Which we're still doing now. And, you know.
Right.
So.
And so, but I mean, the, taking that same, I feel like we're kind of missing the guy with the little press card in his fedora.
Yeah, exactly.
You know what I mean?
Exactly. You know, that had that power to be able to, because that's how we got the story out, was we had to have the reporters and we had to have the newspaper. And, you know, there was radio and radio was, but they had the same reporters that were going around to the scenes. So it's an awesome episode, an awesome way to bring the visual to what the radio show was. And I think, you know, very well timed with having the radio show for this many years and then all of a sudden.
Right. And it was huge at the time when it hit. Yeah. It was a hit.
Yeah.
So, I mean, because it was that, especially to what, your 8, 10, 12-year-old kid who got his nickel and went down and got to sit through the serials, man. That was the jam.
It was. It really was. Before we jump out of here and drop over into something else, I did want to mention another character. You know, we've talked about the influences on the Green Hornet, you know, the Phantom, the Lone Ranger.
Jimmy Dale,
all the way back to Scarlet Pimpernel. But I've been aware of another character I wasn't quite as familiar with. The character of Bulldog Drummond. Have you ever heard of that name?
Nope, that's a new one to me.
Okay. Bulldog Drummond was a character created by Herman McNeil, also known as H.C. McNeil, but mostly he wrote under a pen name, a pseudonym of Sapper, S-A-P-P-E-R.
Okay.
And if you look at the character of Bulldog Drummond, it's in this exact same vein.
Okay.
Of, I'm rich, and in Bulldog Drummond's case, he's come out of World War I.
Oh,
as a captain. He's known as Captain Drummond. He's come out as a captain, and he has all of these other guys that were in his company that were very, what's the word I'm looking for? They were his men. And
loyal
to him. And he's bored. They've come out of the war and they're all bored because they have nothing to do. He's a rich guy. He just goes down to the club, you know, and drinks and, you know, whatever.
Carouses.
And he puts an ad in the paper. I'm actually listening to the audio book, the very first audio book, which was done back in 1920.
Okay.
And he puts an ad in the newspaper looking for adventure, is what he does. And he has someone that reaches out, you know, somebody's looking for their lost dog or, you know, whatever. It's, no, that's not what I want to do.
Right.
And finally, he winds up finding that one, and that's the book is all about this vigilante kind of thing that he's become. And they mention a number of times in the book about, well, shouldn't we call the cops? No, we don't want to call the cops. Why would we do that?
It just brings me to the realization that the world is now full of billionaires, and not one of them is a crime fighter. It makes me so mad.
There's not one cape or mask in anywhere.
No, just a stupid space race.
Oh, God. All right, the first episode of the 1940 movie serial is The Tunnel of Terror.
Which, not the Tunnel of Love.
Not the Tunnel of Love. If you want to see that one, that's late night television for you. Key Luke gets third billing in the show. That's brilliant for 1940.
Huge.
It is just huge. And that's, again, a whole topic that I want to talk about. It's on YouTube. If you want to try and find a decent, if we can find a decent link, we can link it over on the show notes.
I found both the like a playlist that is each individual of the serial, and then I did find the cut together.
Oh yeah, the movie
yeah.
version that they did. Yeah, okay, and we'll link those in the show notes.
Yep,
which would be awesome. And is that it? Is that the show?
I think so. Well, we had one more topic that you wanted
to... That was the topic, talking about Bulldog Drummond.
Oh, Bulldog Drummond. Okay.
Yes. I wanted to circle back at the end with Bulldog Drummond.
Is it wrong that I just picture Gary Coleman?
Yes.
Okay.
Okay. Just thought, you know, you need a little buzz for that.
Well, it's the only Drummond I can come up with.
Yeah, there you go. So if you have not had a chance, be sure and visit greenhornet66.com. We appreciate the comments that everybody has been coming to the table with. I just can't thank everybody enough.
Oh, it's making a couple of dorks feel real loved.
Yeah, dork is the word. All right, the Green Hornet Case Files, Corey and Greg, and...
We're ready to roll on out of here?
I think so.
All right. Thank you, listeners.
Thank you, and we will see you on the next show. Yeah. How can we do a cliffhanger on the show? Can we do a cliffhanger?
What is the next topic?
As the night envelops the city once more, our journey through the hidden alleys of history and valor comes to a close. You've been riding shotgun with the Green Hornet Case Files, where the echoes of the past meet the voices of the present. Tune in again for the next thrilling adventure, where shadows speak, secrets unfold, and the legacy of the Green Hornet continues to inspire. The Green Hornet Case Files is a Grail Productions podcast. The Green Hornet is owned exclusively by Green Hornet, Inc. Until next time, vigilant listeners, keep your wits sharp and your spirit unbreakable.